Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
He's in his Twilight Zone pajamas hugging his Rod Serling doll all curled up.
You're the Twilight Zone.
You're entering another dimension.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. Next, we'll be Talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everybody, and this is indeed Talking Twilight Zone. And once again, I am here with my co-host, Bobby Neer, Robert, and Dave. How are you doing, guys?
Fine, thanks.
Doing
good.
Fine, I guess.
Good to see you. And, of course, I'd like to...
What's that train in the background there, huh?
I'd like to welcome Felix. Hi, Felix. Good to see you again. One of our devoted listeners. And... yes, today's story is called The Fugitive.
We going to talk about the one-arm alien?
Not to be confused with the classic television series starring David Janssen.
You mean not to be confused with this music?
Not even close.
Okay, well, there's something.
Not even close. And
I want to thank Bear Fan Ron for that clip Yeah, that was his. They were making tease of me there, but I thought it was kind of funny. They're saying I have this Rod Serling doll. And actually, I do have a Rod Serling doll. I don't know if you want to hear it, but here, let me pull the string back.
Behind a tiny ship heading into space is a doomed planet on the verge of suicide. Ahead lies a place called Earth. The third planet from the sun.
Oh, wow.
A Rod Serling doll.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Now the questions that come to mind. Where is this place and when is it? What kind of world where ugliness is the norm and beauty the deviation from that norm? You want an answer? The answer is it doesn't make any difference.
And it has like different modes on it here. Like I got the talking Tina mode here. Let me get that going here.
Tina does everything. She moves and she can talk, and I just love her already.
My name is Talking Tina, and I love you very much.
Oh, ain't that nice?
Very cool.
Let's try another one here.
My name is Talking Tina, and you'll be sorry.
Ooh, that don't sound very good. Well, hey, wait a minute. This also has the Twilight Zone theme on here, so let me... go ahead and pull that string again. And?
We are sorry, but CBS has asked for this song to be removed. We apologize for the inconvenience.
See, CBS has to have a hands in everything, huh? Wow.
Okay. Oh, very cool. But anyway, this story, it opens at a public park, and a group of children, they're playing softball, and they're accompanied by old Ben, a kind grandfatherly gentleman whom the kids adore. And when it's old Ben's turn...
Oh, wait a minute, we got a little flash information.
Stop it!
We're here for you.
And now, Mr. Serling.
It's been said that science fiction and fantasy are two different things. Science fiction, the improbable made possible. Fantasy, the impossible made probable. What would you have if you put these two different things together? Well, you'd have an old man named Ben who knows a lot of tricks most people don't know, and a little girl named Jenny who loves him, and a journey into the heart of the Twilight Zone.
You're right, I forgot
the clip. Watch that. Put the mode and dummy on this thing. I don't think you want to hear the dummy here.
I forgot the clip.
Take the pill. Take the tablets, Robert.
I'm going to take the red pill. So
well, anyway, they're accompanied by old Ben, and when it's old Ben's turn at bat, he hits the ball over the fence, it's out of sight, and you know, the softball game ends. So they decide they're going to play spaceman. So old Ben, he runs behind a big tree to prepare to take on the role of the spaceman. And when he emerges from behind the tree, he's looking like a nightmarish monster with a shell. And the children, they zap him with these pretend guns. And old Ben pretends to be taken down. And he goes back behind the tree. Then he reappears. And he announces that the spaceman is gone, that they killed him. And then the camera pans to Rod Serling, giving that opening narration that Robert just gave us. And he's noting that it combines science fiction with fantasy, improbable made possible, impossible made probable, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, Ben, he carries Jenny home since she walks with a leg brace, and that slows her down. And Jenny lives with her mean, nasty aunt, Agnes. So when they get to the house, Ben, he makes his roller skates disappear because he's taken her home, you know, on roller skates. And this little trick is observed by two very nicely dressed men who are watching the house from across the street. So after they get inside, and Aunt Agnes yells at Jenny and Ben for being out so late, the men, they enter the apartment building, and they question Agnes about Ben. And Agnes assumes that they're police, and she tells them that she believes Ben to be of a questionable character. So Jenny, she's been sent to bed without supper for spending time with Ben. But she overhears the conversation, and she goes upstairs to Ben's apartment to warn him. So he eventually, within a few minutes, confesses a secret to Jenny, that he's actually from another planet, and his appearance is only a disguise. And he realizes that it's time for him to go away again. So before he leaves, he uses a strange device to heal Jenny's leg, so that she can walk again without the brace. Well, the two strangers see Jenny walking down the stairs, running after Ben, and she doesn't have a brace on anymore. So they use a device identical to Ben's to make Jenny temporarily deathly ill, and that forces Ben's return to save her. And they do
this.
Those
are good for cooking stews and also sausage,
exactly.
Too, isn't it? It's a handy little gadget.
Very handy. Handy dandy. Handy dandy kitchen gadget. So Ben comes back to her room, and he makes her well again, and she thanks him. But she sees the two men standing there as well, and they're addressing him as Your Majesty. So finally, Ben explains to Jenny that he's not a criminal, but he's the king of his planet, and he grew tired of ruling his world and all the pressures that came with it. So he came to Earth, you know, I guess for a little vacation. And the men tell Jenny that Ben's people, his subjects, they love him as much as she does, and they have to bring him back. And he has to continue the remainder of his 5,000-year reign. So Ben knows he's got to go back. And he also knows that he can't bring Jenny because that's against the rules of the planet. He can't bring, you know, her back with him. So he's granted a moment alone with Jenny to say goodbye. And he promises he's not going to run away again. And Jenny comes up with a wonderful little plan that will keep them together. She has Ben change himself into her identical twin. And since when Ben's subjects walk back in, since they can't tell which one is Jenny and which one is Ben, they are forced to return with both of them. So at the end of the episode, Rod Serling, he holds up an 8x10 black and white photo of a handsome young man, noting that the photo shows old Ben, and that's his true appearance, this handsome young man, and that when Jenny grows up, she's going to become the queen. Aww. So
someone in the room, there's a wardrobe in another world with a lion and all.
Exactly. Oh, welcome, Bear fan, Ron. So glad to see you here again today. So anyway, this episode, it's another one of Charles Beaumont's offerings, and it's one of the cutesy ones. You know, J. Pat O'Malley as old Ben and Susan Gordon was little Jenny. I mean, they were good in their roles. They were delightful, I guess, as you know, he is kind of like a grandfatherly old man. He's cute in that way, and he's kind of like Ernest Truex, you know, because he always has that very sweet grandfatherly look about him. You just got to love him to death. And little Susan Gordon, she was cute as Jenny. And they were good in the roles. But, you know, I those cutesy episodes are just not my cup of tea. I'm just not into them. To me, Twilight Zone's supposed to be scary. And this story, it reminded me somewhat of season one's One for the Angels, starring Ed Wynn. Because both episodes center around an old man with a particular fondness for children. and each man has an especially strong bond with the sweet little blonde girl. Only difference is that O'Malley's character is an alien and Wynn's character is not. Now, I will admit I did like One for the Angels a little bit more than The Fugitive, and I think it's because Angels have that creepy aspect of Doom with the stone-faced Mr. Death hanging around. And I forget who played him, Maury somebody, but he was good as Mr. Death. So I like that one a little better. Fugitive has the not-so-ominous guys chasing, you know, old Ben. And, you know, old Ben has that bushy mustache. And, you know, they're not trying to cause his demise, as Mr. Death was trying to do with Ed Wynn's character. They're just two of his subjects trying to bring their king back home. Nothing creepy, eerie, or ominous about that. Now, I'll give credit to the costume department for the scary monster suit that was used in the opening scene. Felix mentioned earlier in the chat room here that that costume scared him when he saw it, I think, the first time. So, yeah, that was a pretty creepy, outfit. And Ron, he's saying, Aunt Agnes, holy cow, what a real, yeah, you know why. Rhymes with witch, I guess it is a witch or whatever. But, yeah, she was pretty rotten. But, you know, I did like that costume. But it was a good costume. It had a large upper lip piece that resembled his bushy mustache. In fact, I think that suit might have been perfect for season 5's Nightmare at 20,000 Feet instead of that fuzzy sheepskin outfit they put on the gremlin. Looked like a damn pair of pajamas. But, you know, I also have to mention the crazy little device the characters used to both stun and heal. Now, they reminded me of those, as soon as I saw it, it reminded me of those little plastic handheld fans that are so popular at pools and beaches. And that's exactly what I thought. You just turn that little fan on, it just spins around. But, you know, that's understandable because the cheap creeps at CBS were so horrible, Rod, regarding Twilight Zone's budget. So they couldn't do anything more spectacular than that. And Nancy Culp, she played Jenny's mean, rotten aunt. And it became obvious, just from the way she talked, that caring for Jenny's, that must have been thrust upon her somehow. Maybe her parents died or something. And it was a responsibility that she certainly didn't like. And she was Nancy Culp, she was a great actress. I mean, because she was typecast, but she was always good in the role she had, because she had that very prim and proper demeanor, and she was often cast as the brainy, culture, totally non-sexy type. I mean, she was not a particularly attractive woman.
Mr. Drysdale, how did you feel about the parties?
Jane Hathaway. No, she wasn't an attractive woman. She had that stern, prudish look about her. But she was good in those roles. You know, she's best known for her roles as Miss Hathaway in the Beverly Hillbillies in the 60s. And, you know, during one scene in the episode, they show her character crying when the doctor tells her that Jenny may not live. But we have to wonder now, is she crying because she's really sad about the news? I think that's a long shot. Or she just doesn't want to have to deal with burying this kid. And that's more likely why I think she's crying. It's another problem that she has to deal with. But anyway, you have a guy who hates ruling his planet as a king. And I don't know why he couldn't simply abdicate. However, he was from another planet, and there was no way of knowing the rules and protocol, other than the small bits of info that they told us at the end. But, you know, so his subject said he was loved. He didn't want to return. I guess he didn't like the pressure of it, but he was very loved. It's not like, you know, he was coming back and somebody was going to kill him or anything. But my only guess,
he hadn't done anything wrong, so should this episode have been called A Fugitive? Maybe it should have been called A Renegade or something.
Yeah,
because
I guess
it wasn't really wanted. Yeah.
Right, exactly. I guess, but in a way, when you're running from something, you are a fugitive, right? He was running from his planet, so he was kind of a fugitive.
It was misdirection, wasn't it? I mean, that was to give jeopardy to the episode, I think.
Right, yeah. And he was a fugitive from his planet, which I guess that's what they're trying to say. You know, he was running from his responsibility, so he was a fugitive in that way. But he just didn't want the responsibility. He was a kid at heart. You know, he just wanted to live a carefree, fun and games type of life. But he didn't. He go back, and Jenny went too, and she ended up marrying Ben later on, became a queen. Oh, how sweet. You know, I didn't like this one as much as One for the Angels. I didn't think it was absolutely terrible, though, so I'm giving it a 2 for fair. But I have to mention one thing. There was one scene that I had to laugh. It was particularly funny to me when they showed the two men standing in the living room of Aunt Agnes's apartment after they stunned them. She was sitting there with some man, and he, I guess it was her husband, I don't know, but they were just frozen, and the guy sitting on the chair smoking a cigarette, and his ashes are getting long. So the one guy, well-dressed guy, walks over, takes the cigarette, and he just flicks the ashes onto the rug and puts the cigarette back in his hand. And I thought that was a great scene. It's like, oh, there you go. Just flick them on the rug. I mean, come on. I'm very, very couth there, you know, very couth. But I don't know. I gave it a 2. Who the heck was? Yeah, I didn't know who that guy was either. Bears fans asking that too. I don't know. I mean, all of a sudden we see him sitting in there, you know, and frozen with Nancy Culp's character. I don't know who that was unless that was her boyfriend or a husband or something. But he just came out of nowhere. But anyway, that's my feeling on this. And welcome, Old Hope. Good to see you here. And I'm going to turn this over to Robert.
Thank you, Lynn. Yeah, well, I had one word for this episode. I called it creepy. You know, I said maybe in that era it was okay for an old man to play with children. But unfortunately in this era, it would be frowned upon today's age. You know, you hear so much about sexual predators of children.
Very fantastic thing.
Yeah, it would have been unacceptable in this era. I mean, that's why at the end of the episode we get something, you know, very rare that we see, which is Rod sitting at the edge at the bed there showing a picture of what the alien really looks like, and the ending with, you know, I felt it was very out of place with that. I mean, you know, we determine, you know, that Ben's not a criminal. He's not hiding just because he just wants to, like you said, get away from responsibility of being king. And the whole thing with, you know, Jenny's leg was just to draw Ben out so that they can, you know, take him back to the planet. I think one thing that this very much reminds me of is an episode, and Dave would remember, the Sarah Jane Adventures called The Empty Planet, the two-part where Ronnie...
Yeah, the robots come in looking for... Yeah.
Yep, Ronnie and Clyde were the only two left on the planet, you know, doing the process of elimination with that, and then a alien prince on the Earth that didn't know that he was, you know, the whole dampening field and all that stuff. So he didn't know until actually he's confronted by Ronnie and Clyde, and they had the robots. I mean, it was an okay episode. For people who don't know what the Sarah Jane Adventures is, here's a little trailer for it.
13 Bannerman Road is where Sarah Jane Smith lives, and it's home to things way beyond your imagination. There's an extraterrestrial supercomputer in the wall, her son, a genetically engineered boy genius, a schoolgirl investigator across the road, and a whole universe of adventure right here on the doorstep. Ready? Always.
And it's very sad because the series is going pretty good. Unfortunately, the passing of Elizabeth Slayton kind of ended the series.
Is that something that showed on the Sci-Fi Channel or something?
Yeah. It was a children's program, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
Sci-Fi Channel didn't play it. I think they only did one season, didn't they, Dave? And then they kind of dropped it. I think after the first or second season. I can't remember. Because it ran for 5 seasons.
Yeah, one season was shown in America on BBC America or something, I think.
I've heard of it. I've just never seen it.
Yeah, because I remembered it because when I did my review and I put it on there, Helen remembered it as well. She said she was going to check that episode out.
I think I found a clip from The Empty Planet. Is it all right if I play it? Hopefully it will play.
Sure.
Clyde, there's this big robot thing.
Yeah, I saw it, big and yellow.
Big and red.
Oh, well, then there's two.
I think they've got guns in their fingers. Gavin saved me.
Oh, look, the other one nearly got me. Saved you how?
Chucked a pin at it.
Oh, that's my boy.
seeing those robots, though, relief, isn't it?
Not exactly what I was thinking, no.
Well, at least it's something we can see, something we can deal with.
And how are we supposed to deal with two big robots? Chuck a few more bins.
Have you seen this? What is it?
You believe us now, then? You're not scared of us?
You more normal than these things are. It's just a language.
Well, it's more like maths. Equations.
Well, maybe that is their language. They're robots. What do you expect them to speak? Spanish?
If it is a signal, who's it for? It's only us.
Maybe it is for us. Gavin, you don't understand this, do you?
No, of course not. I don't know anything about this stuff.
Okay, which way did they go?
Oh, up there.
All right, we'll follow them.
Wait, what?
They'll kill us.
We've got to track them. If they landed nearby, they might be going back to base, you know, some sort of spaceship.
No, we need to get away from them. The more we learn about them, the more we understand, the better chance we've got.
You don't have to come. Wait back here for us.
No.
What if you need saving again?
And that Gavin is the child hiding on the planet, of course.
What's
who
nice
was,
about
who,
Sarah
who
Jane?
Was the child? Who was the child?
Well, he wasn't a child. That was the point. He was masquerading as a child. He was the alien that these robots were looking after, taking back.
I gotcha.
And the way they were looking for him was by disappearing everybody off the planet. But the reason why the other two characters didn't was because they had been with Sarah Jane, and there was something about them that they didn't get moved off the planet, I think. So basically, it's just these three children, so that the robots are searching for them.
Ah, okay, I got you.
And the thing is, since Sarah Jane was kind of a spinoff from Doctor Who, pretty much, Sarah Jane was pretty much in the series of Doctor. She had sonic lipstick that she used. Kind of had the feel of the Scooby-Doo gang type situation, like in Buffy. Also the feel of Nancy Drew, Hardy Boys type, all rolled into this series. And, you know, even though it was for children, I mean, there was parts of it that was for adults as well. Some winks to certain things here and there. But yeah, it was a pretty good series when it was running. And like I said, very much the story reminded me of that one. And even, I don't know if Dave would agree with me or not, even the Doctor, you could say, is kind of a renegade from his own planet of Gallifrey as well. When you think
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. He runs away from his responsibilities in a way, yeah.
There was a couple of times where he was Lord President, but he didn't want the responsibility of that. So, yeah. But also, the whole thing at the end about the picture, as I brought up earlier, I think that was kind of the CBS heads there saying, well, you know, you leave on that note about the old man. We really feel, probably they were saying, the suits were saying, you should probably really show that it was a younger kid and such like that. So they had to, I think they pretty much added this ending on.
Mrs. Gann will be in for a big surprise when she finds this under Jenny's pillow. Because Mrs. Gann has more temper than imagination. She'll never dream that this is a picture of old Ben as he really looks. And it will never occur to her that eventually her niece will grow up to be an honest-to-goodness queen.
So I felt the ending was very tacked on to this story just because of the situation like that.
Well, the aunt's just going to assume that old Ben kidnapped her.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because, you know, they won't be able to find her. She won't be on the planet.
Exactly.
Anymore, so she'll be a missing person.
And she was so close with him.
Carton.
Exactly. And she was so close with him. So, you know, that would be what I'd assume.
Pretty much I give us a 2 out of 5. I think, is that what you give it, Lynn, 2 out of 5?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. We'll go ahead and pass this over to Bobby. Bobby?
Oh, Robert. You know I love you. But if you ever again play the opening theme music to one of the TV's greatest dramatic series in conjunction with crap like this, I swear to God, I will never speak to you again, either on or off this show. So be forewarned. Having said that, let me just say that this is a very sweet and touching story. it really is nice to see this elderly gentleman take on this partially disabled little girl and become her best friend. It really tugs at your heartstrings. And wonderful scenes, especially at the beginning with him frolicking in the park with the other kids. And then taking a particular interest in her. And, I mean, it's just one scene after another of this man with this little girl. And there was just too many to name. I particularly enjoyed the scene where he lured her into the bathroom and threw her up against the wall and had sex with her. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Jerry Sandusky in real life on the evening news earlier this year. I always get these two confused with each other. I don't know why. Absolutely horrendous in every sense of the word. I mean, this is why The Twilight Zone, for me, will never be called the greatest TV series in history, which a lot of people claim it is. I won't say that, because you can't be the greatest TV series in history when you put out swill like this. A Friday night, at least in this country, with The Twilight Zone on, and they expect adults to sit in front of a TV screen for a story that a seven-year-old would be bored by, a stupid, insipid little fairy tale. And it's absolutely appalling in every respect. And I get tired of and at IMDb and other places, I get tired of people saying, well, you know what, it really is a very sweet little story. Yeah, it's a little bit creepy. Robert just said it himself. It's a little bit creepy, but, you know, it's a shame thing the world is this way today. We have to be so suspicious of a man paying a lot of attention to a little girl, because back in those days it wasn't like that. I beg your pardon, there were plenty of child molesters back in the 50s and the 60s. It just wasn't talked about on the evening news. It's absolutely despicable to watch
That's
this.
True.
I mean, he takes her into the bedroom and sits there and starts to tickle her. Is that right? And, I mean, it is just, it's just disgusting. It's just despicable. I can't even look at it. I'm not suggesting that any... Who wrote this? Was it Beaumont who wrote this?
Mm-hmm. Charles Beaumont.
I'm not suggesting that there's anything behind it, but you know what? Use your head when you're writing a story like this and understand that that's not even an appropriate scene. It really wouldn't be an appropriate scene if it was her real grandfather, much less a perfectly strange man. And so it absolutely is absolutely appalling. But, I mean, even if you look beyond all of that, and I'm not willing to, the story is just horrifying, just horrible. It simply is ridiculous. Every time, I mean, just 2 weeks ago, we talked about The Serve Man and the thought that it degenerates just in 1 week from that into this is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, I don't know whether Serling was drunk or stoned or lost his mind or whatever, but for a man who cultivated a series like this, you'd think he would look at stories like this, and not only this one, but other ones that I've ranted against in the past and will in the future. We got a lot of crap coming up, especially in the last season. And that the man would look at that and say, not on my series. You're not putting this on my series. I mean, make a Saturday morning cartoon out of it or something like that. But not here. I mean, the story is just awful. And I've read everywhere the acting was good. The acting was horrible. The child is annoying. J. Pat O'Malley playing a part that he played his entire life. You can do that. You can sleepwalk through a part like that, and he did. And then, of course, there's Nancy Culp, the world's most flat-chested woman, absolutely way over the top, just eating up the scenery. Absolutely ridiculous. I only wish I was as flat-chested as she was. And it's just absolutely, just totally ridiculous. And what was that idiotic thing that they were using that he waved over her to?
It looked
like one of those silly fans you put batteries in and you hold in front of your face.
That's what I said. It looked like one of those fans.
It really scared the crap out of me because she was laying in bed, and for a minute there I thought he was taking out a vibrator, so it really scared me. I didn't know he was going to do it. It's absolutely awful. I mean, I watched it again this morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, because I had insomnia, and I was figuring it would put me to sleep. But it was so appalling, I've been up ever since. It scared the hell out of me. I couldn't even get over it. The Twilight Zone, what are all these stories? What is wrong with Beaumont and Matheson and Serling and their obsession with old men wanting to go back to their childhood or wanting to cavort with little kids, whether it's Kick the Can or the one we just did on the board about the man who refused to grow up and wanted to live as a boy with his mother and all that junk. I mean, there's too many stories like that. I don't know what their problem was. They seem to have this obsession with going back and being a kid again. I've said it on the board in reviews, and I'll say it a thousand times. I don't want to go back to being a kid again. I had a lot of problems as a kid. I wouldn't mind going back to being about 35, but I don't want to go back to being five. It's just a horrible thought. I wouldn't take that chance if I could. But once again, we had, you know.
You've got Ron laughing his ass off.
Okay.
Ron's so, laughing his butt off.
But I just think the whole story is just awful. It's just awful to sit and watch this kind of thing. Now, 2 weeks ago when we did To Serve Man, and talk about going from the sublime to the ridiculous, it set some sort of record. And 2 weeks ago I mentioned at the end of my commentary about IMDb and about what the people were saying about To Serve Man there. And at the end of it I said there was a poster there who had said, oh, To Serve Man is one of the greatest stories of all time. And I absolutely just love it. And by the way, the one coming up after this is also one of my all-time favorites. And Robert and Lynn kind of gasped as if he's got to be kidding me. Well, I went back to IMDb today, as I do on every story. And this story, of course, gets a 7.4 out of 400 voters, of course, because everything over there is fabulous. It doesn't matter what it is. But this guy who claimed at the end when he wrote his review or his commentary about To Serve a Man, who said it was one of the finest episodes and then said that this one was also one of his favorites, wrote this. I'm going to read just the first two lines of his commentary, and this just says everything about being a moron. This is a direct quote because I could never make this up. He says, and I quote, "It took me nearly half a century to learn that the greatest 1-2 punch in Twilight Zone history occurred back-to-back in season 3 of the series. Well, for me at least, as on any given day, To Serve Man and The Fugitive could trade places as my top 2 favorite episodes." End of quote. Just imagine, not Time Enough at Last, not Eye of the Beholder, not Living Doll, not Nightmare 20,000 Feet, but this. You just can't decide what belongs at the top of the list. It's either To Serve Man or The Fugitive. You know what? Call the mental health clinic and have them pick up this man immediately because there's something seriously wrong with him. And this kind of, you know, when I read that kind of stuff, I got to wonder exactly what is wrong with certain people. Now, I can accept that there are people who like this story. That's fine. If you like it, great. But I just, it's awful. Aside from the creepy aspect of it that I've already mentioned, it just doesn't belong in this series at all. And then in 2 weeks, we got another episode that's lousy, too. And I think even though Twilight Zone did fabulous stories, and certainly To Serve Man stands above just about everything else, there should only be something on TV today that's even close to that. And that's fine, and it deserves credit for that and for the other stories that we've always talked about. But, you know, you can't be a really great series if you can't be consistent. If you just close your eyes and you throw darts at a dartboard over for just put something out there and just to fill time, and this follows it. I mean, it brings everything down. When you watch To Serve Man, you think to yourself, it's the greatest series in the history of the world. I mean, I can't believe I'm watching this. And then 2 weeks, and then a week later, to put this in front of you. I don't know, you know, I was very young back then. I don't know what I was thinking, but I probably left the room or something. I don't know. It's absolutely dreadful. The only thing, other thing I can say about it is that you people have got to be kidding me when you tell me that monster costume was really good. It's the most laughable thing I've ever seen in my life. I had pajamas as a kid that were scarier than that.
I didn't think it was that big. You got to admit, that costume was a lot better than the one from Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. I mean, that was absolutely – I love that episode, but that was an absolutely ridiculous costume. With the furry sheepskin thing, it was so silly looking. It didn't even look like a –
Well, that's
like,
fine, but that
real.
Doesn't excuse this, but just because
well,
that is
was,
idiocy.
No, I'm just – I didn't think this was that
I'll
bad.
Have something to say about that when we get there, but, you know, but that has a fabulous story behind it, so you can kind of overlook it. So anyway, I gave this a 0, of course. I really should have given like a minus 20, but I'll keep it at zero. It just is absolutely, positively dreadful. And I would say to people that the crazy idea that there's, it's really very innocent. It's just that we're thinking bad things these days. You know, you don't want to see an elderly man playing around with a little girl. Honestly, people even back in the early 60s and in the 50s knew that there was something wrong with that. As I said in my review of this, when I was a kid, there was a man next door to us, an elderly man just like this, who befriended me, and I spent a lot of time with him. His wife died, and he was very lonely, and he just, you know, he didn't get anywhere near me. I mean, it wasn't even close. He didn't touch me, didn't anything. And in the scene here where he starts to tickle her is just unbelievable. So that's it for me. It's just a zero, and I'll just try to get beyond it, but just keep it away from me. And if Serling wants to have a really great series, one that people talk about forever, you need to stay away from junk like this and the next one coming up and way too many more in the future. Okay, Lynn, that's it for me.
Okay, and I just want to welcome guest number 8. Hi, guest number 8. Nice to have you here. And I'm turning this over to Dave.
Guest number 8 missed what I had to say. I may have to say it all over again.
Ah, no, yeah. No. He was here for a while.
Make
okay,
sure you listen
Dave.
To the recording. You don't want to miss this.
I didn't get to see it all the way through. I saw a few parts of it on YouTube just to catch my memory. Just on that one point, I don't think the bit I saw, he didn't do any tickling. I think when she carried him in, to get him past these people, he changed into a mouse or something, and then she carried the mouse into the bed.
He tickled her while he was sitting on the bed. I didn't make that up.
No, what I remember was she puts the mouse on the bed, they pan to her face, she covers her face so they didn't have to show him transforming. Then he's sitting on the bed because it was the mouse transformed into him, and then he says to her, he points to her stomach and says, "Was that ticklish when I was there?" Meaning, having the little mouse that she was hiding, did that tickle? It didn't mean that he tickled her. But
can I ask you a question? I don't want to interrupt you. Can I ask you a question? Do you have any children? Do you have any children?
Yeah,
at all?
Two grown up. Yeah.
Okay. Well, when they were that age, would you have been happy with one of them being with an old man sitting on the bed? I don't know if you had a daughter.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But on the other hand,
I rest my case. Okay.
But you did also, I think, overstate it, because you said even a grandpa or an uncle are, you know, wouldn't. I mean,
it depends on the age of the child.
Their uncle would babysit and read them bedtime stories and things like that. I mean, I don't think there's anything per se wrong with that, but you're right. And I think Lynn covered it a little bit in the beginning. What was it, Robert? They tagged down that ending just to dispel that might be the feeling that some viewers would have got. And I'm sure...
Oh, that was from the suits I felt.
Oh, right. Okay. It wasn't a great episode. Couple of things that amused me. Oh, and by the way, this was Series 3, Episode 90, which, since this is Twilight, Talking Twilight Zone, Episode 90, there's a little bit of synchronicity there. Yep, Episode 90 aired on the 9th of March, 1962. You've talked about some of the cast and so on. This chap, by the way, as you say, he could do this part easily. He's only about 58 when this was actually filmed. And it did remind me also about the Kick the Can episode about the man in the old folks' home. And again, that's the getting two stories out of one story, really. The funny thing for me, and I don't know if this is because I'm in the UK and I've got a different sensibility about these things, but this young girl, when she's quizzing him and trying to find out, you know, what terrible thing could he done? And he didn't do this, and he didn't murder. Well, what's more terrible than murder? Are you a communist? Yeah.
That's right,
she did
ask him that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this girl's only supposed to be about 8, never mind 10. I mean, you know, how come she's sort of asking him, are you communist? I mean, but still, I thought that was rather sort of reds under the bed sort of thing. Surprised me when it came out that. It may well be due to, we do say this, don't we? And I think Robert will agree on this point, that all science fiction, in fact, actually you could say about any television shows like Westerns, If you watch a Western TV series, you can tell the decade it was made in from the cultural references that go in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you see them in the Roy Rogers era in the 1950s, they all carry a bloody guitar and they've got a red neckerchief around the neck and so on. And in the 70s, they're all wearing chaps and low-slung guns and, you know, and long hair. And so any program always reflects the times in which it was made. But there's not a lot. I agree again with Robert on the that costume. Reminded me, apart from the head, of a Star Trek episode, Robert, the one where Captain Kirk, the two captains of two ships, and there's a stalemate going on. So this alien race that's very powerful, they beam the captain and this lizard creature captain onto the planet without any weapons, and they have to fight. And the fate of the two ships depends on that. And this lizard character had a very similar sort of scaly sort of thing. That obviously it had more of like
a crocodile.
That's when
Kirk had to go make gunpowder. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
It reminded me of that sort of costume. So I suppose it.
And Next Gen does it later with Daemon.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, but yes, it was a way. The thing I saw when I saw that thing, the machine he used to cure, to treat the girl, and then I thought, although I think they weren't out then. Do you ever remember those lights that came out? They were like filaments that you lit. Do you ever remember them? They were like fiber optic lights. Like,
oh,
lots of little,
yeah. And they would they would flare out.
Yeah, and underneath you'd have like a bulb, and then you'd have like a different coloured filters,
yeah.
and the little things would change colour.
Yeah, the fibre optics, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, they probably came out in the 60s rather than, well, later 60s, early 70s, but that's what I was thinking it was. Yeah, there's not a lot to say about it. It was an indifferent episode. I totally agree that to compare it with last week's episode, is surprising, let's say. But I would probably give it 2, but let's say it's 1.5 to 2. It's that's about it. Oh, and one of the other characters that nobody's mentioned, one of the two men, didn't he used to be in it's gone out of my head now, Perry Mason, the actor Wesley Lau, he played Lieutenant Andy Anderson in the series Perry Mason.
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
probably,
and he also was in Gunsmoke, Have Gun Will Travel, the Time Tunnel, Mission Impossible, and so on.
Yeah, probably could see all that on IMDb, yeah, see where he was.
Yeah,
cool.
Sad as well, looking at that young girl, she was the girl who played Susan Gordon.
Susan Gordon.
She already died, only aged 62.
Really?
Yeah, she was born in 1949, so she was actually 13 when she was playing this part.
Did you say that Jay O'Malley was 58 when he did that role?
Yeah. If you notice, he's got like, if you look at his eyebrows in it, he's got grey eyebrows, but they're like stuck on like Father Christmas grey eyebrows, and you can see his black eyebrows underneath.
Huh.
Yeah, he was born in March 1904.
Well, he does look older than 58, though.
In actual fact, he was 57, was he?
Mm.
He was 57.
Wow.
He was a week short of his 58th birthday.
My God,
and that was when it aired. Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was like probably in his late 60s or something. Jeez.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So, it just seems amazing, isn't it, that sometimes the poorer the episode, the longer we talk.
Yeah. That's
so,
true.
That's
okay.
Is anybody else on audio to speak? So I'm not holding anybody up.
No, I guess that didn't make it this week. Felix gives it a 2 out of 5, but he does give the costume a 5. He liked the costume. He said that scared him. And Bear Fan gave it a 3. That's Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby snicker in the background there. Yeah.
Be nice. Well, I gave it a 2. You gave it a 2. Robert, Dave gave it a 2. Bobby gave it a 0. And we have another 2 from Felix and a 3 from Ron. So cool. It's a little off around the board there. Nice cross.
Well, I wanted to ask you guys, since you guys are back in Philly, you enjoying the rain that we've been getting for the last few days heading your way?
Oh, we only got one day of rain. I was just, Dave asked me the same thing. Yesterday, it rained yesterday. It's cloudy today. Because since we've been back, it's been very mild and we've had a lot of sunshine. Yesterday it rained, and today it's been cloudy. No sunshine today, but we didn't get. I think it drizzled this morning and then it stopped, so it's been okay. Now tomorrow, I don't know if it's going to rain tomorrow or not, but it has been really nice.
4 days of it. It's supposed to end Tuesday. So
Ron said, "Take your rain back." Well, I don't know. I mean. It's been very warm here, though. I mean, unseasonably mild, which I love. I mean, I don't like cold weather. It's been in the high 50s, low 60s. It's been very nice here. We've had the windows open all night, you know, with the screens on, and it hasn't been cold. It's been great. Really good.
That's good.
Yeah. So, anyway, we do have another episode in 2 weeks, which is called Little Girl Lost.
Okay, Bobby, you ain't gonna have a coughing fit or anything bad happen.
And that will be on Saturday, December 22nd, 2 weeks from now at 6 p.m.
Well, wait a minute, the show is almost over. Doesn't anybody want to wish me a happy Hanukkah?
Oh, happy Hanukkah, Bobby.
Thank you.
Dreidel, 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 dreidel. Yeah, happy Hanukkah.
Well, let me go ahead and play the one for next week for everybody here.
Rod Serling, creator of The Twilight Zone, will tell you about next week's story after this message. And now, Mr. Serling.
Next week, an excursion into a strange and totally different dimension. We'll bring you a story by Richard Matheson called Little Girl Lost. And this one, we guarantee, is not the kind found in a police docket or in a missing persons bureau. When this little girl is lost, we're talking about out of this world. I hope you can join us next week and find out precisely where she's gone.
Oh, Rod, love that humor of yours.
You
I can't be here for that. I have to help Santa deliver presents. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Now, we don't have to worry about the Christmas holiday interrupting our show because this is the 22nd. So we...
Too bad.
Show misses Christmas. So that is it for today. Thanks, everybody, for coming, and especially Ron and Felix, and guest Dave just left, but thank you to everybody, and I do hope we'll see you again in 2 weeks, and hopefully Ed will be back. He may have had a DJ job tonight, because he's a DJ, he does it at different functions, so that might have been where he is tonight. So everybody, have a wonderful rest of the weekend, and I'll see you in 2 weeks. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. This is a song that... there's a lot of Christmas songs out there, and not too many Hanukkah songs. So wrote a song for all those nice little Jewish kids who don't get to hear any Hanukkah songs. Here we go. Here comes Hanukkah, so much Hanukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the festival of lights. Instead of one day of presents, we have 8 crazy nights. When you feel like the only kid in town without a Christmas tree, here's a list of people who are Jewish, just like you and me. We got Ann Landers and her sister, dear Abby. Harrison Ford's a quarter Jewish, not too shabby. Some people think that Ebenezer Scrooge is. Well, he's not, but guess who is? All three Stooges. So many Jews are in showbiz. Tom Cruise isn't, but I heard his agent is. Tell your friend Veronica, it's time to celebrate Hanukkah. Oh, bar, get a harmonica on this lovely, lovely Hanukkah. So drink your gin and tonica and smoke your marijuana. If you really, really want to go, have a happy, 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 happy Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah.